You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 86 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave, and I'm joined, as usual, by Matt.
Hello, hello.
And Jay.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, good evening, actually, isn't it, I suppose, yeah. Or I'm losing track of the, time and the days now.
And this week we also have a super special guest for the whole show. Please welcome Duncan.
Hello, everybody. Hello, how y'all doing?
Yes, not bad, not bad. So Mr. Duncan Rhodes is joining us for this podcast. So we're going to be talking about your history with Games Workshop, your current painting adventure. In fact, but before we go any further, how about you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, listeners. Hello. My name is Duncan Rhodes, and through weird, strange twists of fate, I found myself doing painting videos on the internet. A lot of the right place at the right time, I think, is the history of that. But for some reason, I've ended up teaching a lot of people how to paint stuff. And that's cool because that's what I really like to do.
Excellent. Awesome. So we'll be chatting to Duncan a little bit later on in the podcast. We also have, this week, in honour of Duncan being with us, we're going to be talking about our top three models that we painted in our lifetime. So any models that we're particularly fond of that have a pride of place on our shelves. So we'll be discussing that. We have had an absolute barrage of community top threes this week, so we'll try and get through as many of them towards the end of the podcast as we possibly can, and we probably will put some on the podcast post on spruesandbrews.com as well, so a lot of you can check those out. We also have quite a bit of news this week, Matt, I believe.
We do, yeah. It's we're getting there with the news. The world's slowly turning, so it's good.
Excellent. But before all that, let's talk about what we've been up to in the hobby for the past 7 days since the last podcast recording. Jay, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, cool. So as you know, my weekly pledge this time was to get my Sanguinary Guard and the Dark Angels Terminators finished. So I had a week off work and I'd like to say I've done it. I've got them done. So I'm really happy how they turned out. I haven't decided yet whether to put the wings onto the Sanguinary Guard or not. Currently, they're not on there, so I haven't made that decision yet. But yeah, so that's cool. So I'm just looking forward now to the Forge World store reopening so I can order my next bit of components to start building and painting their next units. So I think they're going to be some sort of Assault Marines for the Blood Angels and a Dreadnought for the Dark Angels, I think.
Nice.
That should tie me over until the Luminef Elves finally.
Excellent.
I know what you mean. I keep looking at those.
Oh. I mean, luckily this week we've had White Dwarf turn up, so I've been able to get my Luminef fix this week. But yeah.
You were twitching, weren't you, Jay?
I am, yeah. I mean, it's got to the point now where I'm scouring eBay for old Warhammer High Elves, thinking maybe I could paint some old High Elf Spearmen and maybe that'll tie me over.
It's a shallow dream. When the new ones come along, you'll be like, "Ah, the new ones are nicer."
Yeah.
You'll be strong. Be strong.
I know. That's it. That's it. Stay focused.
This week for me, I've done a bit of painting. I've painted a Primaris Lieutenant for my Imperial Fists. Really happy with how he's turned out. He was one of the store anniversary models with the Stalker bolt rifle, holding his helmet instead of wearing it. Not very clever for battle, you know, in the middle of battle, but
he looked cool. Tactical doing it.
Yeah. I have also based the remainder of my Imperial Fist, because I'm really bad at basing models as I go. I tend to leave it to the very last process. So I've based the rest of my Imperial Fist that I've been painting over the past few weeks. I have started painting a Dune Crawler, but that's in a very early stages. And I did also try and paint an Imperial Fist Predator, but I tried doing it with contrast and it didn't quite work as well as I hoped. So it needs a bit of work to bring it up to a standard that I like. Oh, and I've also painted an Alpha Legion Terminator Librarian.
No, he looks really cool. This was contrast over silver, was it?
It was, yes. I really like the greeny bluey effect. It looks so nice. So yeah, he's probably about 50% there. So I'll get him finished this weekend, I think. And yeah, get my June crawler finished as well. Matt, what have you been up to?
So I think listeners will remember last week, the last recording of the podcast, I'd had two Gargants arrived. I'd built them, I'd sprayed them up, and that night and the following day, I pretty much finished them. I had the next day off, so just all day working on some Gargants, and really happy with how they turned out. Really looking forward to the Sons of Baya map, because, you know, you can't go wrong with big stompy giants, can you?
Not all.
And then, yeah, in the kind of few days since then, for a bit of a palate cleanser, I've been painting up some Necromunda Bounty Hunters for my Venator Bounty Hunter gang. So all the nice Forge World Bounty Hunter models, because they look really cool. Really, really fun to paint up for something different, really.
Yeah, they look really cool. And they're a really good gang to use in Necromunda as well. I know before all this lockdown started, we finally started getting a few games in, didn't we, Matt? And they're a really fun gang to use.
So yeah, we enjoyed painting them, and then had a bit of a hobby room clear out the other day. So got a load of boxes and boxed it up, and it's needed a sort out for ages, and I've never got around to doing it. So I thought, you know, got time on my hands with everyone in lockdown. So yeah, sorted out the room. So now we can play some games at some point in the future when we can play games again.
See, I keep my hobby room a mess intentionally, because I feel it adds to the ambience when we're playing a game. 40,000, you know, there's rubble all over the battlefield and there's mess all over my hobby room. Just helps us get into the mood. That's my excuse anyway.
Awesome. Duncan, what have you been up to the past few days whilst we've been in lockdown painting and modelling?
Well, I've been working. Roger and I are still able to operate, so I have been painting some miniatures. This week, I suppose this podcast goes out and it's in a few days, isn't it? So So listeners, well, if you follow what we've been doing by now, you'll know that we've been painting. We did a miniature from Fallout Wasteland Warfare, which was a super mutant, which you'll be able to see now on our YouTube channel. We also did a fusilier, a French fusilier from the Napoleonic Wars, and we did a base that's like sort of like really sort of cloy mud, you know, the kind of thing that you'd have Deathcore or Krieg running through. There's all puddles and stuff on that, and that was really fun because I've got to use some cool stuff on there, and it's actually quite simple to do it, and it looks really nice, I think. And so that's what we did this week. And the week before, I was also doing some Warhammer stuff. We did a Kyrak Acolyte, and we did an Imperial Fist a little bit before that as well. And we did a Tau Fire Warriors. So those are the kind of those are the last Warhammer things I painted. But scattered around me, I've rather than painting full armies, I've been doing little odds and ends that are all kind of going towards the Academy, and sort of trying to fit in my own things around the sides of it. What I do have actually that I've got sat right here looking at me, that's kind of a priority thing to do now, is the miniatures that are being sent over to Nova for their charity auction at the end of the month. So it's basically some crew from an Imperial Knight, you know, like a dismounted pilot and a pair of men-at-arms to be like his bodyguard. So they're the next thing I'm going to be painting. But yeah, aside from that, it's kind of been these odds and ends, really. I'm a terrible hobby butterfly. And I know you guys will have seen from, you know, on Warhammer TV that I done all the hangout and paints. I kept flitting between different subjects from week to week. I am like that, but also with just about every game there is out there. So scattered around me, I have so many things. So many, many things. And every time I see a Warhammer newsletter or something come through, I'm like, oh, that looks nice. So, yeah, I do keep eyeing up those Lumineth too. Basically, I'm painting lots, but not really achieving any armies, it feels like.
I was going to say, do you struggle to get like a complete project finished then? If you're having to, I mean, I'm the same. I tend to flip between different armies and different units and different models, and it does take a longer time to get an army painted, but I find it keeps you motivated because you sort of enjoy painting different things. Mm-hmm. So do you struggle to finish complete armies then, or does it just take a lot longer?
I do. Yeah, I do struggle. I kind of find that I go through phases. So I'm in a kind of phase at the moment where I'm sort of flitting between different things. And I mean, let me think. What have I managed to touch on in the last 2 weeks? I've done some Warhammer stuff, some 40K stuff, some Age of Sigmar stuff, Fallout Wasteland Warfare, Star Wars Legion, A Song of Ice and Fire, and a few historicals as well. And these have just been sort of just random miniatures. Those historical the Romans, by the way. They've just been sort of like just random individual figures that I've been painting, or things that are for work. But project-wise, every now and then I'll sort of like catch one and it'll hook me and I'll pursue it. quite determinedly for a number of weeks, and I try and get enough to have at least a small army. And I build armies kind of with waypoints in mind. So if it's a 40k thing, for example, I'll be aiming to get to 500 points, and then I'll let myself do something else. Right. And I'll come back to it and get it up to 1,000.
Like a good milestone to reach,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. So sooner or later, something's going to hook me, and I'll end up pursuing until I've finished enough for an army. And then I'll feel sad because I can't go and play with anybody.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we won't have too much longer in full lockdown. We might actually be able to get some socially distant Warhammering on the go in some shape or form. Mm-hmm. I think that wraps up our introduction to this podcast. As I mentioned, we do have our top three and a segment with Duncan later on in the show. But we're going to take a slight pause and come back with this week's news. What do we have in this week's news offerings, Matt?
Well, a few bits of good news this week. So you will remember the awesome Catechin kernel that is super hard to get hold of at the moment. Mm-hmm. Well, someone unboxed one online, and it looks like it's actually a store anniversary model they've used for this. Mm. So I do wonder if in the future we might see this as the anniversary model, which would be really cool because I really, really need this model desperately in my life right now. Dealing from Predator.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's quite a few cool Catechin sort of special models, aren't there? So it would be cool to get a collection of them going.
Yeah, I really hope they redo the basic infantry at some point because the command kit's really nice, isn't it?
Yeah, but they can't do that until they've done Valhallans.
I agree with that.
In 40k news as well, we had a really, really cool trailer go up at the weekend based around the Silent King of Necron myth. So this is the fella that essentially sold the soul of the Necrons to the Catan, and were involved in the war in the heavens. Nice so guy. I'm sure nothing will go wrong with him coming back. I'm sure it'll be perfectly fine.
I can't wait to see where this goes. I'm quite excited. This could be like a big sort of a new chapter in Warhammer 40k. I mean, the Silent King, he's a very, very powerful and person in the universe. So, you know, he's sort of up there. He's like the Necron's version of the Emperor almost. So it'd be interesting to see where they go with him if it comes into like a big thing.
Well, Jake, we haven't got long to wait because the trailer ends with a date of the 23rd of May, which is a week on Saturday, or possibly next Saturday by the time the podcast comes out. And so whether this is a pre-order date, obviously we don't know if the factory is open again or anything, or we'll get another trailer then. Either way, Necrons are cool. Duncan, you were working on some old school Necrons not too long ago, weren't you?
Yes, my classic Necrons. I do have a love for them. I really do. I remember that that Necron came out. The first one of those metal Necrons I encountered was one of the ones he got free with White Dwarf years and years ago. And I thought he was amazing. Now, looking at it now with grown-up eyes, I can see they look very, very goofy. you know, they're sort of like, you know, scary. Kind of like. But I find it sort of charming. And I think a lot of players will have this. Like the thing you encounter when you get into the hobby suddenly becomes like a real emotional anchor point for you. And Necrons, especially the old classic Necrons, are very much like that for me. And I actually, through my last teen years, I dropped out of the hobby a little bit. Then when I came back into it, the Necrons have been reimagined whilst I've been away. So suddenly they had that very sort of unknowable, almost not quite Cthulish, but like Elder God kind of feel about them. And I found that incredible, and I've enjoyed watching the evolution of them ever since then. You're giving them more personality and having the insane lords and all that sort of thing. So, I think this is always cool. Every time that Games Workshop looks at Necrons, they do something exciting to them that I don't think anyone really expects them to do. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I think people are going to love what Games Workshop's putting out over the rest of the year. That's okay. Go on.
I was going to say, we've seen the Psychic Awakening Necron that's coming, the new character, and it looks a lot darker than the previous version of Necrons. He's like sucking the life essence out of a Imperial
poor Minister and priest on his base. Yeah. He's seen better days, I think.
Yeah. What do you think of the sudden appearance of that?
It's really cool. I want to start a Necron army now. It's really bad.
Let's be honest though, that new Necron model pales in comparison to new Inquisitor, right?
It's all about the Necron. It's all about the Necron, Dave.
I'll just sit here in my inquisitorial corner and just eagerly anticipate the release of that model.
Well, in Age of Sigmar, we had a Lumineth Heavy White Dwarf just come out. We've had a load of stuff revealed, so there's points costs in there and some abilities. Jay is our resident kind of elf expert. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so the White Dwarf for subscribers has started arriving on people's doorsteps, and inside there's quite a lot of Lumineth content. So there's a big battle report where all of the different Lumineth units that we've seen in the preview so far take part, and there's some information about the different abilities, some of the different rules, some information about what Teclis can do and some of his special rules as well. In addition to that, there's some information about the Lumineth Warcry Warband, so rules for putting together a Lumineth Warcry Warband. So if you're looking forward to the Lumineth release, the new White Dwarf is going to be really, really good for you.
Awesome. You a little bit excited, Jay?
I can't wait. I mean, I really love looking at all the images in White Dwarf, so all of the pictures of the models on the battlefields and things like that, and I've been sort of playing around with what kind of colour scheme I'm going to use. I really, really like the standard sort of Games Workshop scheme with the cream cloaks and things like that. But then I also really, really like the traditional high elf sort of mithril silver with the blue and white cloaks. Oh, I really don't know what I'm going to do.
You're going to do about 20 different test models, Jay.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. I'm going to have like a unit of 10 different looking elves and then finally decide on one. I mean, even the bases are really cool. If you look at the bases on Teclis and on the big bear moths, really, really impressive.
Cool. Awesome. Hopefully not too long to wait for those. If you are a fan of the Realm Lords, there's also a book coming out from Black Library with Dale Lubas, I think it is, his debut novel. So, yeah, I'm sure that'll be one that's on your reading list, Jay.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, I mean, the Lumineth, until recently, we haven't really learned much about them. So, yeah, any sort of information like that you can get hold of would be really, really cool. So, yeah, I'll definitely be picking that up.
Awesome. And if you are interested in lore, that segues nicely into Soulbound. We've got a review up over on the website now, and it is a phenomenal book. Even if you don't play role-playing games, it's got some amazing kind of like lore content and information about Akshi, and yeah, it's a really, really good book. So I'd recommend heading over to the site and checking that out, because they've done a cracking job with it. Back in the old world, however, we've got bears coming for Kislev, and that's the best news I've had all week. It's so obviously, you know, that they've teased a few models now of this this Kislev line, and yeah, I'm going to be all over these when they come out in what, 3 years time or whatever it is. What are your thoughts on the old world, Duncan, as a fan of classic Warhammer?
Oh, I think it's very exciting. I think I can remember doing a seminar in one of the shows in America. I believe it was Adepticon, and I remember somebody asking me about what I thought about the old world going and stuff like that, and I said I predict that it's going to return as some form of specialist game done by Forge World in the future. Might be up to 10 years, you know, to make sure Age of Sigmar's probably blossomed by that point. Didn't think it'd be this quick. But I got it. I think it's great. I really like it. I think the so the thing about like some like Warhammer Fantasy, right? It's same with 40K. There's going to be a lot of people who have been into Warhammer for such a long time that it's going to be an integral part of things. And it's really sad to suddenly be separated by that. And even though you can still go and play old Warhammer, and there's definitely like old Hammer existing as a thing, and Middle Hammer is a fascinating fact that that's there. As the company moves away from it, it does people start following the new models and things, and gradually it starts fading away. And I think that's kind of sad when it's something that's so it's got such depth to it, and so many people love it, and so many people have armies for it and things like that. So I think it's wonderful that Games Workshop is supporting it and allowing people to play it if they want to. It's going to be interesting to see what form it takes. I'm surprised to see so much Kislev stuff there. Yeah. I didn't think they'd do that. But I think that's really cool, because it's something that's been established in the lore for a long time. I think people are going to love it. I wonder if they're going to reimagine the Winged Lancers, because I always want to have an army, a Kislev army, and I want to have a massive, huge amount of Winged Lancers and Griffin Legion as well. I'm really keen to see what they do with that, because their miniatures stayed... those models are made for about 5th edition, I believe. And there was definitely an evolution of Warhammer, and you could see that with like the Bretonians, how the old ones from 5th edition were there, and then they changed when 6th came along. They sort of being chunkier and stuff and modernised them. I really want to see what they do with Kislev with that sort of progression on things. So I think it's brilliant. I think it's great in all ways. It surprised me how early it was announced too. I wonder how far away it is. I imagine we won't actually see anything concrete for it for a good long time yet.
No, I think they've learned something with the way they handled the Sisters of Battle, that people like to see these little, even if it's just concept art, it just builds the hype and anticipation, doesn't it, for the final release?
It's a reassuring thing, is to know that, you know, you're not forgotten, I suppose, is what it says. If you're like old Warhammer Fantasy, you like playing Warhammer Total War and stuff like that, and you want to be able to get your old Orcs and Goblins army out and stuff, it's like it's a supporting thing that's like, you know, keep your army. It's still going to be cool. It's still valuable. It doesn't just have to be you loving it and wanting to keep it for the sake of keeping it. It's like there's going to be a goal to have this thing now. So I think it's a really good thing. I think it's a lovely move. And very nice for them to tell the world.
Awesome. And while we're still in the old world, Games Workshop have an offer at the minute. You can get all of the End Times book for a bargain price of £32.24, which is a very precise amount, but I'm sure there's reasons for that. But that is all five of the big books, digital format, from Nagash through to Archaon. So they're really, really good books. So even though some of the rules obviously don't relate to the current game, for the lore, it was a cracking chain of events.
I loved the Kane one. I think that was the only one I actually purchased because I was really into the elves at the time, and it was really cool how they tackled like the dark, well, Malkeith and Tirin and Teclis, and it was awesome. Such an epic read.
If you've not read them before, you can get the whole lot for just over £32, which seems pretty good. And that is all the news we've got this week, Dave.
Excellent. Some really good news there. Good news there, Matt. Hopefully we'll have even more next week as these restrictions are hopefully being slowly lifted. Maybe we'll even see some pre-orders, fingers crossed. We can only hope. That brings us to the end of the news segment. We're going to take a pause and we're going to come back and we're going to speak to Duncan about all his achievements. Okay, so we cannot have the Duncan Rhodes on our podcast without dedicating a section to chatting about, what are you up to nowadays, Duncan, and sort of your history and your achievements with Games Workshop. So obviously you did introduce yourself at the top of this podcast, but maybe do you want to reintroduce yourself and maybe give us a bit of a background of how you got to where you are now?
I guess so. Good Lord, the Duncan Rhodes. My world's gone very weird over the last few years. I think 12-year-old me would be terrified to find out what was going to happen because I've always been quite an introverted kind of person. And I certainly have never been comfortable with the idea of like blowing my own trumpet, you know. So these sorts of topics always feel a little bit weird for me. Basically what I've always enjoyed doing, I've worked for Games Workshop for quite a long time. I don't anymore. I left them about 5 months ago now, I think it is. But I've worked in retail for a number of years, and then I was in the studio and then Warhammer TV for another 10 years after that. And my favourite part of working for Games Workshop, I realised fairly quickly in retail, was I enjoyed making the hobby accessible to people because it's you can kind of forget when you're in it for a long time, but it's an intimidating thing when you suddenly look at these miniatures and think, where on earth do I start? What do I do? And I've seen, witnessed in stores that if people they start to get into this, some people get very shy about it. Sometimes they're embarrassed about showing the models to each other and that sort of thing. And if they end up having a poor experience in a game or something like that, it can put them off for a long time. And you guys know that, you've been doing this hobby for like years, right? Years and years, decades. It's like it becomes a really big part of your life. And if you end up anything like me, a lot of your friends are going to be met through this kind of thing. It's going to be sort of your passion, your relaxation, your socializing, so many of these different things. And I think it's a real shame if somebody gets interest in this sort of thing and then a bad experience puts them off it. So I found myself really channeling into this sort of introductory thing. And where I really specialised at it was in the painting side of things and the hobby side of things, and let them do that. And then basically showing them how the game can be fun. I struggle to get my head around competitive play, so I'm certainly not the person to teach them how to do hardcore gaming or anything like that. Making things accessible, I think, is what I found I really liked. But anyway, I basically worked for retail for a number of years. I eventually got talked into leaving and moving on by my family, who were asking, my parents, like, when are you going to get a real job? Like, oh, okay. So off I went out into the world, and I got a job in an office where I was selling, I was processing orders for things like pipes and gas valve controllers and all this sort of thing. And, you can imagine a job like that. That's not the sort of thing I was passionate about, but it paid the bills and things. And, I got on well with the people who were there. Weirdly, in Games Workshop in the sculpting studio, I'm pretty sure there's a central heating controller that I posted to them. I recognize it. It's like an SRS 150 or something like that. I recognize it. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I basically carried on doing that. But one day this job appeared in the army, in the hobby team that's called at the time, and it was Peachy who told me that it was there, and I applied for it and I got the job. Because whilst I didn't necessarily display the painting ability in the interview, as I understand it, I displayed the correct attitude and the willingness for it. I got the job, got very lucky, and never took it for granted. Put as much as I could into it. And again, I found myself growing. It was for articles and things of White Dwarf and stuff like that, and the army books and things. And the role was to kind of paint the back rankers or sample armies of things. And I found myself channeling again towards the painting tutorial stuff, like the steps by steps. And I was always trying to make them as good as I could, as clear as I could. But the reality was that photographs are great for reference and things, but to actually see how the thing's done, video or not being there or video is about as good as you can get. Yeah. Then I met Roger, and he kind of changed everything, really.
Excellent. I know we only mentioned a few weeks ago, I think you did, Matt. Some of the old Warhammer painting stuff on the back of boxes in books, where it was like, here's your paints, these are the paints that you need, and oh, here's the finished article. Mm-hmm. That used to be how it was, and then obviously with the evolution of painting tutorials and stuff, it really took it up to another level, where suddenly you could paint a model and it looks like it is on the box art. It's not, throwing a bunch of paints on a model and suddenly that's what it's supposed to look like. I mean, you mentioned obviously you cut your teeth in retail. Did you do any miniature painting before that, or did you sort of join Games Workshop with maybe not much in the way of hobby knowledge before then?
I had painted stuff before that. I got into the hobby when I was 11, and I'd done model aeroplanes and things like that before, but I saw a space marine, and basically he looked to me like, I was quite into Star Wars at the time. I was like, wow, he's like a stormtrooper and Darth Vader in one with a gun that shoots missiles. I mean, I got these space marines and basically I wrecked them, but I enjoyed myself. And I remember my dad liked that I was taking so keenly to like a craft thing where I was actually doing something and making something. So I'd often sit and paint with him, and then we'd play the game together, just using the sort of little quick reference free leaflets you could get. Mm-hmm. So I sort of kind of started learning there. And there are a few things in the store that, I kind of learned a bit. I was, like I said earlier, I was very shy at this sort of time. And I remember one day plucking the courage to basically ask about a technique, and the sort of response I got from the staff member, he's not there anymore, long since moved on. But he was a very much competition painter. So me coming along going, how do you get that effect on a rhino? It's like, well, you dry brush it. And it's like the way the response was like, made me like, oh, I asked a stupid question. And if you don't know, right, it's not a stupid question. It never is. So that's partially what set me on that path, I guess. But that stopped me asking questions as to how to do things. So for years I just sort of muddled along my own way of trying to figure it out, and those step-by-step pictures, I just couldn't understand them, because it would be like, remember the Blood Angel one, it was like, when it got to Step one, okay, base coat. Step two, all right, I can see some lining's been in there to shade things. Okay, step three, everything's been neatened up. It's all bright and stuff. Step four, how the hell did you get to that? And I remember sort of like hearing people refer to it as step lie. You know, it's like a joke and stuff. Because you sometimes get painters wanting to kind of show their ability. So the guide doesn't necessarily then work as a guide. And that's something that I've always been trying to stick to. And I don't think people always... we got a lot of requests for like do these more advanced techniques and things, but if you're doing the video for a particular subject with a certain goal in mind, you have to sort of structure what you're doing for that target. Yeah. So it's not about showing off, it's providing the teaching content. Now remember the Blood Angel, the red arm has been highlighted with bleached bone. How on earth did you highlight the red arm with bleached bone? But it turns out it mixed it into the colour. So, okay, then it suddenly makes sense. But I kind of like muddled my way through. I sort of figured out dry brushing a bit better and stuff. But it was when I started in retail, the guys who I worked with are all better painters than me. And Peachy was one of them. There's another fellow called Neil. And these guys, oh, and also there's another Chris. And all three of them still work at Games Workshop, in fact. And they kind of taught me what I was doing wrong. They pointed it out to me, showed me how to highlight things like Space Marines and stuff. So I kind of learned on the fly and started getting the knack of it and started like pushing myself to learn extra things. So yeah, when I joined the studio, I still, you know, it's weird looking back at things from a few years ago, because you guys must see this, like you see how you improve. And it's quite odd looking back at that, but it's all part of a journey, I guess. But yeah, I had some core experience when I joined up.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, I was quite lucky, because I think I pestered you, Jay, growing up on painting, because I was never very good at it. And to be honest, it's only been in the last sort of couple of years where I've really started to enjoy it. It used to be part of the hobby that I really didn't like. Jay, you used to make me sit there and be like, yeah, right, we're going to paint together, Dave, and I want to see that model finished. and I'd just procrastinate, you know, do you want another brew? I'll put the kettle on. So
you remind me of my mate Nigel.
But yeah, it's funny how sort of over the years you sort of change. So obviously Warhammer TV has played a massive part in obviously your current project, what you're doing now. And did you have any sort of moments where you look back and think, I really enjoyed doing that? Like, did you have any particular favorite moments while you were doing Warhammer TV?
Yeah, so many. So it was like, it's weird actually, because it's changed so much in my life. And when I was signing up to do it, I had utterly no idea what it was going to do. And it took off in a way that I don't think anybody expected at all. So there's lots of moments in it that I think that we're really proud of. And it's the same for Roger as well, because he was the guy behind the scenes who had the idea for all this kind of stuff for the painting videos and things, and just got me on as his presenter, and he, you know, gave me training and things like that. I had a bit of a knack for, you know, also the willingness for teaching things and explaining things, but he really honed it. So I think a really great moment was the first time we put up our first set of videos on a model, which was the Imperial Knight. And I mean, I'm really wooden in those videos, like really awkward and stuff. And it's evolved a lot since then. But what we found was that all of a sudden people were coming up to us and saying, even people at Games Workshop who work there, who'd look at a model of a knight and think, I have utterly no idea how to paint that. And they'd watch the video and go, that's easy. And they bought one and they'd paint it and it'd look as good as ours. That was a really special moment. That was kind of like justification of like, there's actually something in this. There's, you know, we can help a lot of people in doing this. There was another moment when we did a Space Wolf for Grey Hunter, and we had a store emailed us with a photograph of a receipt of a guy who'd just come in, and this staffer had known this guy for years, and he liked like the games and everything, but he was always scared of painting. He watched the video on the Space Wolf and was like, I can do that. And he came in and he bought everything that was in that video, completely everything. And this photo was the receipt of how much money he'd spent because of the confidence that he'd been given. And he went off and then painted a Space Wolf army and was super proud of it and happy of it. So, you know, moments like that were awesome. There was also times of actually meeting people at shows, and you find sometimes you get these quite strong connections with a person where they tell you a story as to something that they encountered or something they let them do, or even sometimes when they're having like a really difficult time, like they've been struck by some kind of tragedy or something like that, and they'd find themselves, the painting videos would take them away from it, and they do a thing, and they just then have like this object with which they associate only happy memories. And that was a really quite powerful moment, actually, when I encountered that. One of these situations, I had an email from the person, and then I met him at Nova one year. I just sort of bumped into him, and he was like, "Oh, I emailed you." And I was like, "Oh, did you? What did you say?" And we had a really nice chat. So there's been a lot of moments like that, a lot of really special times. I've really enjoyed when I've ended up meeting a kid and their parent. And, you know, you have a great chat with the kid and stuff and get them all excited about things, give them some advice on what they want to paint and stuff. And then you have a chat with their parent and you find out, like, how much they enjoy doing the thing with their kid, and you're kind of helping enable them with it. So there's been so many things, but none of it was anything that was expected out of it. It certainly wasn't why I joined up to do it. But I'm happy that, you know, I can give people these positive experiences. It's lovely, it really is. I'm very lucky to have had that opportunity. And I've never wanted to take it for granted. And there's a trail of people, I think, that I've been meeting over the years that I've been asking. And this will go for you and all your listeners as well. If I ever become really arrogant about this sort of thing, give me a good hiding, won't you?
I think the when Warhammer TV came along, I think that really was a massive turning point for the company. And obviously, Warcom followed Warhammer Community and stuff. And it did really mark a big turning point in the hobby. And it definitely helped me with my painting as well, which I'll come to in my top three. So I won't do any spoilers right now. Obviously, it did bring up a lot of internet fame. For example, Two Thin Coats. I mean, when you said that for the first time, did you have any idea that that was going to explode into basically your tagline?
No, not at all. I thought people would hate me at first, because at the time when all this started, Games Workshop was not loved by the community. The weird thing is, the people who are like behind the scenes, kind of, yeah, a lot of them, they're just not changed. So it's just that the attitude to talking to people has changed. And I think that the stuff that we were doing helped encourage that change. But the two coats thing, like, it's just an actual advice. It's just what you do. And when you realize it and start implementing it, the difference you see in your miniatures is enormous. So I think that turned out to be the key thing that I had to keep on reiterating, especially because we had to approach each video as if it was the first one and people had ever seen from us. That people then ran with it was super weird, like really strange seeing pictures of myself with a meme and stuff. like, I didn't know how to handle it at first, to be honest, but you know, as Roger pointed out, it's all good spirited stuff, like none of it's mean. And it's like a huge surprise. Like I said, I thought people would hate me, but they actually were going on about this, and it was sort of like a charming thing. And then at shows, people would like present me with a shirt that says Two Thin Coats on it and things like that. And so I started, like, if they asked me to sign something, I'd write like Two Thin Coats on it, and they'd be dead happy. So it's weird, but what I like about it most is that it is that bit of advice that people don't realize at first. So the fact that people are throwing that around all over the place and even calling the way I paint stuff the Two Thin Coats method, I think that's great, because it will help people get a very core building block to their ability. And so, again, it kind of built into that, you know, it's helping unlock the hobby for people. So I think it's cool for that reason. Super weird, though.
I bet. Now, have you got used to weird internet fame?
No. I always hide from it. Roger finds it more amusing than I do with the stuff we're doing now in the academy. I don't really go looking around for that sort of stuff, because I find it just too strange. you know, like it's just too odd. Instead, I prefer to engage with people in a more one-to-one way. So, I mean, we've got the email, the site we've got now, the email address, and when people use the contact form there, I'm the one who responds to the emails. And I like doing that sort of thing, because it's like a direct, like, one-to-one association. But I think that's a better use of my time than going around trying to find what people are saying about me. I'm sure there's people out there who don't like me, but that's fine. They're welcome to their opinions. I don't need to go looking.
No, definitely not. I mean, obviously, we've been going for a little while now, and it's still a bit weird when we go to sort of Warhammer Fest and stuff, and people say, "Oh, you guys, you do Sprues and Brews and stuff." I mean, this is nothing like the level You know, if you walked into a hall at Warhammer Fest, you would be swamped. But it's kind of a really funny but nice feeling that you kind of bring the hobby to people and they're really enjoying the content that you do.
I think one of the weirdest moments we had was we were at Warhammer Fest and Ray Dranfield comes over and goes, "Oh, you're the guys from Sprues and Brews. Can I take a selfie?" I'm like, "I'm sure this is meant to be the other way around." So it was really bizarre.
Oh, Ray's great, isn't he?
He is a legend.
Very, very skilled guy. He's like super talented with the kind of scenery he makes. And the thought he puts into it when he explains to you how these things are designed to go together is like, wow, he loves this.
He's incredibly passionate about what he does. And you can tell in the stuff that he puts out, it's just fantastic. And he thinks of just the smallest details. Mm. You're just like, there's no need for that to be on the sprue, but I'm so glad it is. Mm. Because that's just amazing. Just so, so cool.
Absolutely. Obviously, and that actually brings up for me what is the most awkward thing I find about this bizarre fame. It's basically because my face is on things. That's why people know me. That's why it's really come about. And I want it to be about the fact I'm helping people with stuff. I don't just want it to be for the fact I'm there. But there's so many talented people who do amazing things, like what Ray says. The sort of stuff he does is incredible. And he posts about it on Twitter a lot, doesn't he? Showing all of what everyone can do. And I find it really sad that I'll turn up to someone back in the day, I was at Warhammer Fest and I'd be there talking to people all day about things. And there's always people around me who have done all these incredible things that actually do the thing that the people love, like the guy who sculpted the Warlord Titan kit, for example, the guy who made that, he's there, and I'm there, and I showed people how to paint it, and they all want to talk to me, but I'm like, but he made it.
Yeah.
And I was like the same pointing at Roger, like all the video stuff was his idea, he pushed for all this. So that's a very weird thing that I find difficult to handle.
Obviously, we've spoken a lot about painting models in your history in painting. Do you actually get to play many games? And I'm not just sort of talking about Warhammer, because obviously you've mentioned already on the show that you've got an interest in other gaming systems. Do you manage to get much gaming in pre-lockdown?
pre-lockdown. So over the last few months, I haven't, because I've not had a great deal of time. I played a few games. There's a local shop near me. With a mate of mine who runs it. And, you know, I've been over there and played a few games with him. But I often would find I was just too busy for stuff. And, I mean, my hobby is mostly painting anyway, so it wasn't really a great big deal to me. But the most regular gaming I'd get was on Sunday nights, where I've got, like, a gaming night that's been going for, years and years now, since I was in Games Workshop retail, in fact. And we'd all meet up and play various games, and this will cover things like D&D or Magic or, you know, anything. And we've done Warhammer games there and campaigns and stuff. So the majority of my Warhammer gaming experience, I think, has been through this Sunday night gaming. And, we've done great big campaigns and stories and stuff like that. It'd be cool to try that Age of Sigmar roleplay game in that, actually. Mm. That's mostly when I play, but I certainly spend more time painting. I'm actually with lockdown now, I'm really keen to go and play a game or something. I've painted so much stuff and I want to try it out.
Any particular preference to what you'd play? You know, what are you hoping will be the first game you get to play once lockdown's all done and gone and we can roll dice again?
Well, what I really want to go and have a game with is I want to play Ice and Fire, Song of Ice and Fire, because I got the Targaryen starter box. Those starter boxes, they're a little bit like the, for this particular game, I won't talk too long about it because now you guys are warm, really. But it's like these sets are a bit like a start collecting set, but they're also a core set for the games, they include the rules and all this sort of stuff as well. Cool. And usually the army's big enough to be able to field a full force out of it, and I've painted the entire contents of this Targaryen box, so it's all themed on Dothraki, so everything's like a barbarian horse horde, and there's a number of the characters from the books in there and things, and the game plays in such a fluid way, and the battles I've been playing with it have been a Lannister army, which, for those who aren't really aware of the IP, it's basically like a standard medieval army, heavily armored stuff. And I really enjoy the dynamics of how you maneuver with cavalry in that. So I'm super excited to go and try a game out where my whole army is cavalry and sort of medium to light cavalry at that. I think it's going to be a very different dynamic, and I want to see how the game engine handles it. So that's what I want to play first. And you know what it's like when you fully painted something and you're like, yeah, I can try it out. I've got a whole army, man. A whole army. And I can't do anything with it. And I finished it like 6 weeks ago. This is how it feels. So I want to play that. And yeah, that's the thing that's really buzzing that I want to go and give a go. Aside from that, I'd like to have another go of Adeptus Titanicus because it's been quite a while since I played that. And I think that's my favorite Games Workshop game. And I want to get my little knights out again and, you know, swarm across the battlefield and see if I can take out the Titans before I get vaporized by a volcano cannon.
Amazing.
I think I like most about that game is the little control, like your little card board in front of
terminal.
You with your terminal, that's it, with all the markers and the dice. It's like you're actually piloting the Titan. I so hope if they ever do get around to revisiting Battlefleet Gothic that you have a little terminal like that for your ship, like the bridge of your ship with the engines and void shields and stuff. That's the best thing about that game.
That would be amazing to see. Yeah, for anyone out there who's not tried Adeptus Titanicus, if you're more of a narrative kind of gamer, I mean, I certainly am, it's brilliant for it. It's absolutely brilliant. You'll find that as the game just plays, the dice make it into a narrative and you can imagine it all happening. It's stuff along the likes of you'll arm a Titan with a power fist and you'll punch another Titan so that it makes it spin and then falls into a building and takes damage from it. You know, the whole game works around this sort of mechanic. So yeah, if you want to try something cool, I highly recommend it. Don't be off put by complexity of the models or anything like that. They're not as bad as they look, and you really don't need many of them to play a game with. In fact, the Titan starter box pretty much gives you a whole army, so don't be intimidated by it, I guess is what I'm saying.
I really need to play this, don't I? I still haven't played Titanicus.
Well, I managed to get my Legio Ignatum Force painted first couple of weeks of lockdown, and I'm desperate for a game. So I'll have to face your knights at some point, Duncan, in the future.
You're on.
Speaking of that, the hobby and stuff, what does your hobby area look like? Obviously, I guess it's a bit of a studio as well.
My own hobby area is a mess that I'm currently sat in. I basically sort of live in multiple locations. I've moved in with my girlfriend, I still have like my own place where my things are, and her place is quite small, so there's basically not room for it. But my own hobby area in this place is, I know where everything is, but it's a bit messy, and I do tidy it up. At my girlfriend's place, though, it's always very neat and immaculate because it must be. as for the studio, Roger and I keep a very tight ship on that. We make sure that all the equipment is looked after because it was expensive and it was, you know, for starting up, it was our own money. So we look after it very, very carefully. So when we're done with shoots, everything's put away. The desk is always kept neat and clean. Everything's got its place where it's stored. And the miniatures that are around there are only ever the ones that we're about to work on. And when they're completed, they've got like a little place where they live. So, my desk here is a mess. I mean, when I look around it now, I've got like a stack of paints on a rack over there. I've got a box full of other paints, some more paints there. On top of those paints are a bunch of miniatures that are all half done. Let's see, I've got some Khorne Berserkers over there that I converted, some Custodian Alaris Terminators. I've got some Pike and Shot English Pikemen from New Model Army. I've got a second edition Blood Angel with a Flamer. some aeroplanes, and down here I've got some miniatures from War Gods of Olympus, which if you're not aware of what that is, it's like old Warhammer but ancient Greece. I've got some Napoleonic miniatures too, some French light cavalry and a Polish lancer. Yeah, it's a bit too much.
it's reassuring that your painting desk is in a similar state to ours then.
I feel much better now looking at my desk and there's all pieces of half-built Custodes there with snipped up Primaris and stuff.
It's all such a guilt pile. I mean, some of these things are kind of this is where I do my testing for painting videos, and if it's some, like, there's models in there that I know in and out, know exactly how to paint, we can just walk in and do it, but I have to create a script to give to Roger so he can plan his shots and things, and sometimes I don't know how to paint the thing, so I have to do a test one to work out the ways of doing it, and these models will be going like back and forth to, you know, really get the ideal way of doing it that I can figure out. I've got some random half-painted miniatures on here. I mean, what else have I got here? I've got some War Machine miniatures here as well, actually. We're going to do some War Machine stuff for the Academy. Star Wars.
War Machine. I did see there's some new War Machine coming out soon. They were showing some images of that recently, like a more futuristic robot.
Yes. So it's called Warcaster. So I'm not that familiar with the ins and outs of War Machine and things. I've been reading a bit about it, and I really like the style of having a steampunk fantasy thing. I think is really interesting. It's really cool. It actually makes me think a lot. If you guys play video games much, it makes me think of the opening of Final Fantasy VI. which if you guys haven't ever played that game, any listeners haven't played that game, it's worth checking out if you want to go a bit retro. Yeah, the new one is called Warcaster, and it appears to be like a sci-fi-ish kind of thing. It's very high-tech looking, very sleek looking. So they were actually super kindly sent me one of the miniatures, which I am going to paint up to show people on the internet what these things look like. And it's got very, the casting's very sharp on it. And it's interesting with Priority Press. I've seen a lot of people talking about the quality of the casting and sculpting and stuff. They've got this kind of plastic phase that they seem to have gone through, and they kind of come out the back of it. And these days doing metal and resin miniatures, and the quality of them is excellent. So if people are interested but scared of the miniatures, I'd recommend they go for newer factions. For War Machine, I'm talking about things like Crucible Guard. The quality of the miniatures is superb when it comes to those.
Yeah, we played a bit of War Machine back in the day, Jane. It was a really interesting game mechanic with like your casters who control your mechs and stuff. It was a really cool, really cool game system.
I do sometimes like the idea of using like smaller forces rather than big armies. I don't know. It's a bit of a smaller game, but it'd be quite interesting, quite fun. So,
I think before we sort of call time on this segment, I think we really need to speak to you about the Painting Academy, Duncan, and how that's progressing and how that came to fruition and any challenges that you were faced by it.
I suppose I ought to talk about it now. For years I've been working with this fellow called Roger, who, as I said earlier, was basically the guy who started out the painting video stuff and trained me to sort of be a better presenter and things. And the two of us decided, both of us had a bit of a dream of the idea of having your own business. It's certainly been something that Roger's wanted to do all of his life. So we kind of thought to ourselves, you know, we're not getting any younger. If we're going to have a go, could we do it? Will people be interested? I've been painting tons of different miniatures of all these different things for years and years. It's nice to be able to share these things, you know, kind of show people what they're like, and, you know, kind of it's almost like the next step up from just showing how to paint Warhammer stuff. It's like, yeah, that's cool. I love the Warhammer miniatures too, but I also like these other things and, you know, perhaps help people access things that they might not have realized they are interested in trying, which is weird actually, because I have seen, like, we'll post a picture of, like, I paint some Stormtroopers for Star Wars Legion, for example. People say to us that they had no idea there was a Star Wars war game, and they're in, which is cool, because I've helped someone then find, you know, a thing they're interested in, so that's great. But to get back on topic, we kind of decided that if we were going to do it, it was sort of the time to do it, and we were both had the savings to be able to invest into it. So we decided to go for it, and it was incredibly scary. Like super scary, because Games Workshop is a wonderful place and I've got lots of friends there, and it's like a nice warm blanket in a way. To step outside of that and to be solely responsible for things is quite a frightening thing to do. But we wanted to try it. We wanted to, you know, have something that we'll be able to look back at, and, you know, the only way to know if it was going to work is to try it. So we went for it. We set about building a studio, buying equipment and establishing a company, and doing all these sorts of things and learning how to do it, and learning how to make a website, learning how to run a business, getting accountants, all this kind of thing. And then we got to building the site and we put it on the internet, and then we kind of told people we were doing it and we were filming videos. And that, out of all of it, the videos was the thing that we were least scared of, because we had so much experience in doing it. Because Roger and I know each other very, very well now. We work very well together, and we've become very quick at doing things. So the pace at which we're putting out videos, I do kind of wonder what people think about it, because we're able to shoot a full video in a day. For a full miniature, whereas there's times past it would take us maybe 3 days, but we've really honed it and kind of taken it in ways that we want to take it and change things that we want to change. So we were all getting ready for it. We were super nervous, super scared, wondering if we'd made a big error. And then the coronavirus pandemic hit. We were like, oh, God, we're scheduled to go live on that day. What's going to happen? And so we had a lot of discussion about it. And, I mean, there's been lots of times when either Roger and I have got really scared about what we're doing, and the other one's been there to reassure him of, you know, what we're doing and things. And so we basically kind of talked each other up and got our confidence back up and turned the site on. And it crashed within the first 10 minutes.
Wow.
So that was a nightmare trying to figure out what had happened. But we worked it out, got it all running again. And yeah, people started signing up. And I mean, we did our homework before this. We didn't just jump into it. It wasn't like a quick thing that we decided on the fly to do. We did the numbers, we worked out the maths, we figured out how many people we'd need. We did our research to work out, you know, what sort of price we should go for and how likely it is we're going to get the number of people that we need. And so far, so good. So far, we're on target. Everything's going according to plan. Slightly better than expected, to be honest. Which is, I can't tell you how big a relief it was.
I can only imagine, like, starting out on your own. Mm. You just want to make sure those first few months that, you know, it all goes to plan and you start ticking over quite nicely. And then I'm sure it'll become sort of second nature and it'll all kind of take care of itself. But yeah, the initial getting out there and doing it is probably the most frightening.
It was, but it's turning out pretty good. It's really fun being able to do video tutorials on other subjects. I've often thought to myself, what would it be like to paint a French soldier for a painting video? And now I know. There's people waiting in the wings to go, oh, you got that detail wrong about that bit of the history. And
yeah. Wow, yeah.
It's nice to be able to share these other interests and things that I have. It's nice for Roger to be able to expand his creativity, to basically be his own boss in a way of what he does with these things.
Yeah.
But the basically, I suppose, the site is all about teaching people how to paint stuff. It's not about me showing off ability or anything like that, which I think I've certainly seen some comments on our videos of people making remarks of the sort of things that we choose to do. It's always deliberately done to make things accessible. The way we see it is the majority of people just want to get cool armies on the table. There are people who want to learn really advanced stuff, and in the future we'll do some advanced stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite a niche audience when you start looking to that sort of thing, and we want to appeal to most of the people who are interested in the way that we do things.
I
was just going to say, do you get many requests for certain models or certain techniques? Mm-hmm. Or do you? Yeah, you do, right? Yeah,
we do. Yes. So I've got a newsletter that we send out every week, and on the site there's a contact section, and I'm the one that goes through the emails. Now I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to not have enough time to respond to them all, but I'm doing my best. And yeah, there's loads of requests in there. We see requests on things like Twitter as well and Instagram and that sort of thing. And I've got like a big list where I make notes of these things. And you kind of start to notice patterns on things, really odd patterns. Like we've noticed recently having a flurry on some particular Warhammer miniatures of people asking for the exact same things, like in an email. It's like, oh, I'd love if you could do this, this, this. And everyone's saying the same three. So we're like, oh, okay, we better do those. And that's cool because it's sort of like, you know, responding to people, especially for our members. We want them to be really happy with what they've signed up for. So we want to make sure we respond to what they want. We've got a big model planned, which is, again, things that people have been asking for. But it was all, if anyone out there is listening who is a member of the site, I really can't say thank you enough for supporting us for it. We did our best to price it as low as we could to allow us to make a living, judging by our maths and research as to becoming self-sufficient. Because we did look at, could you just do it on YouTube, for example? And it's like, no, you just don't make enough money from advertising at all or anywhere near. You have to rely upon merchandise, and we didn't really want to have to do that. So we looked at Patreon, and the format of it is quite bloggish, and it isn't really what we wanted to be able to present to people. We didn't think we'd get the numbers in if we went that way. You're trying to make it like a self-contained thing for people. If they're willing to support us, they get access to everything. So there's like no tiers or anything like that. It's all meant to be as inclusive as possible. And we've got ideas in the future to make it more so in that way, of allowing members to talk to each other and to share their projects with each other and stuff like that. So far, so good, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And if people out there are wanting to learn how to paint their miniatures in a sort of like in a consistent language within the area where, like, I'll explain a thing in a technique video of this is what it is, and then in those videos you can then see it being used in practice. So they're almost like case studies. If you're interested in that sort of thing, then please do check it out.
And how does one check it out, Duncan?
Well, this is where I have to say my name is an internet address. You go to duncanroads.com. Now, don't get me wrong. it was Roger's idea naming it Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. I wanted to call it something else regarding thin coats or, you know, that sort of stuff. Or but as he pointed out, and rightly in hindsight, my name's become a bit of a brand. So it was wise to use it so people would understand what we're getting. I find it really self-aggrandizing to be using it in this way. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. Yes, duncanroads.com. If you go along there, the site basically will show you pictures of all things that are on there. There's a list of all the miniatures for video guides you can see. It is £3.99. We've not got the US thing. So, well, if you sign up, if you're in America and you want to go through dollars, basically it'll just translate to £3.99. We don't have the ability to do the currency yet, but, you know, perhaps in the future. And it's a monthly subscription reoccurring. So it'll be, it's every, how many days is it? It's just once a month. And for that, you get access to everything. Everything that's on there, everything that ever has been on there. And as we add new videos weekly, you get access to those as well. And we're averaging between 1-3 videos a week. And these are full tutorials, taking a model from start to finish, or showcasing a particular technique, or showing how to base something or something like that.
Fantastic. We will also obviously put the link in the podcast description for everybody to click through, and it'll be over on spruceandbrews.com as well. And we'll probably put a couple of images so people can see what, you know, you're offering on the website. Yep, but thank you very much, that Duncan. Very much appreciated. And we are quite finished with this.
Oh,
we are. Sorry.
Just remembered one other thing. If people do want to see what our videos are like, and you don't, or you don't even want to become a member, that's totally cool. You can see some videos for free on the site, and you can see a lot more free videos on our YouTube channel, which is Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. And we tend to put a new video there every 2 weeks or so.
Awesome. On that note, we're going to take a slight pause and we're going to come back with this week's top three. And so on to this week's top three, where we're going to discuss our top three favourite models we've ever painted. I'm going to start off this week with my third choice. Now, my third choice, Duncan, was actually one of the first tutorials of yours that I did. And that is my Reboot Gulliman, the Primarch of the Ultramarines. It is one of the biggest models I've ever painted at the time. But the thing that really draws me to this model is the Emperor's sword. So I was petrified of doing this sort of flame effect on the sword. But I actually followed your tutorial and I was super happy with how it turned out. And it really completes the model.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really good to hear. I'm so glad. That's why I do the job. That's great. Yeah. It's it is one of those things. It's such a focal point in the model, and you know, people look at that and go, wow, on earth. But to get it, and that feeling of achievement when you do get it and you realize there's no real magic to it, it's just simple methods just used in the way that's supposed to be used, and boom, there you go. That's really cool to hear. Thank you for that.
Definitely. Jay, what's your third choice?
So my third choice is it was one of the biggest models I've ever painted, and I was really quite scared about painting this kind of model. It was a Lariel. The Ever Queen on the Wardroth Beetle, and I actually followed the Duncan's painting tutorial as well to do this model, and it took me quite a long time to, because I think if I remember right, that painting video was split into different segments, so it's quite a long tutorial that one was to follow. So it did take me several weeks to paint the model up, working on that Wardroth canopy, the carapace, sorry, the different layering up, the different washes. And also painting a Lariel herself. So she's like a bit of a bigger model compared to the normal figures I was used to painting. That was really cool. I really enjoyed painting that model. And it's pride of place in my display cabinet upstairs, that one.
Awesome.
Matt, what is your third choice?
Well, if we're going on about big models, it's got to be Vorgorath from Forge World. So as soon as this model was on pre-order, I was like, I must own this. And I was really, really lucky that my wife bought it me for Christmas. And I'm sure by Boxing Day, I'd washed all the resin and got it built. And didn't have an airbrush at the time. So it's all done with a brush. It took quite a while to get that skin colour up with a brush. It was really, really fun to paint. I'm eyeing up Smaug now because, something about big dragons appeals to me.
Yeah, I love your Vorgorath. And he's such a beast to play with as well. I love playing against him. Such a challenge. Duncan, what is your third choice?
Well, contrary to you guys doing really big things, I'm going to pick something really small and very, very nerdy, I think, in my opinion. A Napoleonic French fusilier.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is, it's not necessarily because of the actual model, it's more of kind of what it means to me. So I've always been interested in that particular era in the Napoleonic Wars, mostly because of my dad. And I've always sort of thought about doing, you know, it'd be nice to paint some, but it's such a mountain to get into that era. There's a lot of barriers to it. So a number of years ago, Peachy got me for Christmas, he got me some of these models because some plastics had come out at the time. And yeah, I had a crack of painting them. And this particular box set is Perry Miniatures 18, 12 to 15 French Line Infantry. I just really love the miniatures in there because of that, what that means, because of that being my access point to allow me to paint something that I actually really, really love. And I, since then, I painted the French Army. I eventually then, this was like, well over 10 years ago now, is actually when the set first came out. I then, about 3 years ago, maybe four now, I started painting a new army with the new skills and thoughts and ideas I'd had since then. And it's been something I've been doing on and off ever since. So I've got a fairly large Napoleonic army painted like that now, where I've done everything. I've made the uniform as accurate as I can and as detailed as I can on every single guy. So there's a few hundred miniatures in it, and cavalry and artillery and that sort of thing. But that particular single miniature, for access into doing that thing and be able to learn about that thing and it being the gatekeeper of it, I suppose, I think I'd pick that. So yeah, Perry Miniatures, French Fusilier, one in the full uniform, the full splendor of all the red, blue, white, you know, the really complex looking stuff with the piping. Ridiculous uniforms. Can you imagine trying to fight in those things?
You'd look glorious doing it though, wouldn't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, standing in a row firing volleys and waiting for the other side to fire one back at you. It makes
fantastic. My second choice is actually, when I look at all the armies that I've painted so far, I think this is probably the best army I've ever painted. So my second choice is my Lord of Contagion from my Death Guard army. I think there's something about the Death Guard colour scheme that with the Games Workshop paints and starting with like the Death Guard green spray, I just think it's even though there's quite a bit of detail and sort of gory details and stuff and, you know, tentacles and things, I just think it's quite an easy model to paint, and once it's painted it just looks brilliant, especially when you sort of finish it with the washes. So yeah, out of everything that I painted, I really like how my Lord of Contagion and the rest of my Death Guard army have turned out. So yeah, my Lord of Contagion is my second choice. Jay, what's your second choice?
My second choice is one of my favourite models ever, and it's one of my favourite things in the whole Warhammer universe. It's the Eldar Solitaire. So ooh, nice. I remember when the Harlequins were re-released, the new plastic line, I was so excited about the Solitaire. I love this guy in the background. And I really, really look forward to painting him. So it was a few years back now I did paint him, but I find painting black and highlighting black is quite tricky. And all of these, like his coat and undersuit and stuff, there was a lot of black on him to do, but I really took my time trying to highlight that. The trick was trying to keep it looking black, not going too heavy on the highlights. So I really enjoyed painting that model.
Mm-hmm. And he's had some buffs in the new White Dwarf as well.
Yeah, well, this is it. I've been reading through the Harlequin stuff. I cannot wait to get the Solitaire back on the table now. Make his attacks damage too. Excellent.
Awesome. Matt, your second choice.
So this is a model that we painted for a couple of years ago. We'd gone to our first Throne of Skulls at Warhammer World, which is crazy. You know, we're only an hour's drive away. We'd never been. And I think me and you, Jay, decided to go, didn't we, and give the Throne of Skulls a try. I was like, oh, well, what army should I bring? And I had Archeon, a load of Varangard lying around, and thought, I know, I'll do a silly list with just a load of Varangard and Archeon, it'll be ace. And yeah, it was kind of, it took a lot of time to get paint on this model because it's a big, intimidating model. And yeah, it's actually one of your videos, Duncan, where it was so helpful for doing that. And I think it took me about a month to paint it following this, but just the way you did the kind of the blend on the tail of Dorgar and that awesome kind of flaming sword he's got, yeah, it's my wife was probably sick of your voice by the end of the month with this video stopping and starting over the course of it. But there's things in there that I was able to then apply to the Varangard as well. I think the a painting guide had come out. And were you involved with that at the time? I think it's when Sigmar first came out, there was a Ever Chosen painting guide where some of the techniques are very similar. I don't know if you were involved in that, maybe.
I wasn't, no. That was done by the department that I used to be in. They were called the Hobby Team. By that point, they become the Army Painters. So they were doing a number of books supporting releases like that. We weren't sort of connected in the company in a way, but I would go and talk to them and ask them about things, and I used it as reference in my guide. There are some things that I had to alter about how they were doing stuff to make it work better in the way we were showing it. I suppose not an enforced sort of like, you know, the business making us talk to each other about this kind of thing. We just sort of did it because it made sense, because then the products would support each other.
Awesome. But yeah, that's still one of my favorite videos you've done. And really happy with how Archeon turned out.
No, thank you.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Your second choice, Duncan.
Oh, it's a really difficult choice, you know. There are so many models out there that I love for so many different reasons. And I kind of figured because the Fusilier was something as to what it meant to me in doing something, I should pick for a second one, just a model that I really, really, really like, which is the Caudron Overlord's Arkanaut Frigate.
Nice.
Cool. I think it is a beautifully designed miniature. It's a real pain to paint the thing. and it scares me every time I move it around the table because it wobbles so much. But,
I know that fear.
Yeah. I think, the Caradron are amazing for, they were like a game changer when it came to Age of Sigmar, and that they suddenly invested it in loads of lore that felt believable. They make me think of, I've gone back to old RPGs, they make me think of, like, you know, getting the airship and traveling around the world and stuff. But the idea of the open adventure and stuff, and you can see it on the ship with all the various elements on there and the crew that you get and the little tools that you get for them and stuff like that. It feels like a living, breathing thing where a unit of Caradron Arkanauts would live in it for a prolonged period of time. And I think it looks, the narrative in there for that, the actual style of it, the appearance is beautiful. I really love the Arkanaut Frigate. Mine's useless, though. The Paradox, I called it, which was just like a name that basically means nothing. And it's it'd float on and it'd do nothing. I think the Frigate, yeah.
Nice. We're round to our top choices. So for my top choice, it's a much more recent model. And it was one that as soon as they announced this was coming out in plastic, I was like, I am buying that day one. And that is Gotrek. I haven't used him in a game yet, but I could not wait to paint him. And I think he's probably the best model I painted yet. I really like him. I really like the base. I mean, I've got him on the smaller base. I haven't actually finished the larger, more diorama base that he comes with. But I really love that model, and I love the character. I love reading about Gotrek. So to actually have a model painted up to represent him now, it's just awesome. It's just so, so cool. And he's a beast on the battlefield as well. So that's cool. Jay, your top choice.
So my top choice is going back to not the Sylvan Elf, actually. He was actually a Wood Elf when I painted him. And it's the Spirit of Durfu.
Oh, yeah.
When the new plastic tree men come out, they were so cool, really, really cool. And the fact you could make the different Tree Lord Ancient and the Spirit of Durfu, well, it was just Durfu at the time, from that same kit, and the way that you pose the legs and arms, it changes the look of the model. And Durfu especially, his face was sort of caved in, and there was like a fiery glow coming from behind it. So I really enjoyed painting that model. I actually used your guide again, Duncan, to paint the Durfu. I remember painting all the individual leaves and the skulls. And actually, painting that model, I think, I actually learned a lot more about painting models following that video. So the thinning down the paints to paint the skulls, so you get the real nice bone-looking effect on skulls, where you paint the line across the brow, leaving a bit of the shadow. I never knew about that kind of technique before, so I figured that. And also the blending of the sword. Never done any blending like that before. And I've actually used that same technique to paint all of my sort of power swords and energy-looking swords like that. So I think painting Durfu, I learned more about painting than perhaps any other model I've painted.
Oh, that's amazing. Do you know, I was super scared when I was doing that sword.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time we'd done something like, because on the gash, we'd done the fading in with his cloak, you know, using glazes and stuff to do that. But with him, that was the first time I did any sort of real blending-y kind of technique. And I was really scared of messing it up on camera. And thank God it all turned out well. And then you meet people who, like yourself, who've done it and love it, and it's half. Oh, that's great. And actually, at shows like at Nova and stuff, I do a class on doing power swords using basically the same technique. And it was always really cool when you saw people click on how to do it.
Yeah, well, that's
and
it.
The one that they were doing all of a sudden looked like yours. But, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I would never have thought I could paint a sword that looks that good. But yeah, it looks almost indistinguishable from the sword you painted on the video. And so, yeah, it just shows you what you can achieve. It's not that, you know, beyond your reach, really.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to do it, you can do it.
Fantastic. Matt, your top choice.
Well, my top choice, it's not the newest model. I've had it for a while, but it's got a special place in my heart. And this is my Forge World Exalted Great Unclean one. So I had way back in my Warhammer Fantasy army, and a gorgeous, gorgeous model. I mean, I think it's smaller than the plastic one now.
It's like a Lexa Greater Exalted Demon, isn't it?
But it's still a really, really nice kit, and I spent a load of time doing it. And what made this jump to the top of my list is that it kind of unlocked that hobby achievement of having a model in White Dwarf, which is, you know, wow. You know, couldn't believe that the model had ended up in the magazine after emailing the White Dwarf guys. And yeah, it's really nice to have that as kind of something to tick off the to-do list in the hobby achievements, really. Yeah, it's I don't know if you I know you've submitted models in the past, haven't you, Jay?
I think I've sent some pictures in, yeah.
And the White Dwarf guys are really, really good at offering you some advice on how to change the lighting and how to change the photo. So all that info kind of really helped kind of in future with, you know, taking pictures and putting them up on Twitter with our website. So just the whole experience of, you know, like talking to the White Dwarf guys and getting it in a magazine, that model takes the number one spot due to that.
That's wonderful.
Duncan, finishes off with your top choice.
Well, it's so many miniatures potentially for so many different reasons, but I think for achievement wise I'd pick Archaon as the number one, and that is because of the video we did for it, because I remember the first time we saw it, I mean, the model's enormous and the heavy metal one is absolutely beautiful. It's a piece of art, it really is. And Roger and I stood there in the camera room looking at it, because it just, like, the news had just come in that Archaon's there, and we were there looking at it. And then Roger says to me, "You've got to paint that on a video. Good luck." Slaps me on the shoulder and walked off. And I was like, "Oh God!" So I get two miniatures for doing those sorts of things. One would be the actual video one, and the other one would be my test model to work out how to do it. And I spent quite a long time on that test model, painting different bits and pieces of it, trying to work out what to do. And the order of doing it, and, you know, talking to the guys in the army painting team to see how they were doing theirs and what things I can bring in and what things kind of simplify, you know. Then it was a heck of a lot of work going into it. And then filming it took us 3 weeks, I think, to put it together at the time. So that was a big deal. And to see it finally go online and see people like it, and then see people painting theirs just like that, was huge. So, I mean, there's a similar experience with all those big models that we did, you know, like Alariel and things like the Greater Demons and stuff. And they all have a similar feeling about them, but Archaon was such a big miniature with so many things on it. And it really came out in a way that I was really, really happy with. So I think I picked that as number one. But it wasn't an easy choice.
When I was looking at all the models that I painted, there's so many that I could have done the top 10, I think, especially more recently. I think I found that I was, because I've been painting more and more as time's going on, it's always sort of my more recent stuff that was really standing out as models that I've really enjoyed painting. I can't wait to do this top three again in the future when all our painting has got even better. Just dead exciting.
I find it interesting to see why people pick the things that they do. I find that particularly fascinating because it's the old beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? So all of us will have different reasons for picking different things, and one thing that will look amazing to me won't necessarily look amazing to other people. So, like, for example, I in my Ice and Fire thing, I play as Lannisters. I love the Lannister Guardsmen. They're soft plastic, right? They're not the same level as what a Games Workshop sculpt is, but I really love their aesthetic and I really have lots of fun painting with them. So, I mean, that might end up in my top 10. But it's like, it's fascinating that that's a unique thing to me. So I always find, like, it's interesting to learn different people's favourites because you almost get a bit of their character in that and a bit of their story in things. So, yeah, I think these things are really fun exercises and really difficult to pick stuff too.
Definitely. And now our community have also got involved as well, sharing us their top threes. So we're going to take a slight pause and come back with our final segment of this week's podcast. Time to wrap up this week's podcast with the community top three picks. Now, we're going to try and cover as many as we can. This has been an incredibly popular top three, and we'll include some examples on the website as well. But our thanks to everybody that shared your images. It's very much appreciated. We're going to start over on Facebook. Chris Swire, I think we know him, Jay.
Long-time
friend. He's posted his top three. So a tartan hedgehog took way more effort than I expected. Honestly, this model needs to be seen to believe. It's a hedgehog wearing Scottish tartan. It's amazing. A Tereskew with glowing Godzilla-like spines, and a Hormagon from the Tyranid. So it's good to see Chris getting back into Warhammer 40k. Ian Spear, his third choice is his Iron Warriors Basilisk, back in the day when they could take them. His second choice is the Fellowship of the Ring. Yes, I know it's technically more than one model. I think we can allow that. And his top choice is my World Eater's Demon Primarch. That's nearly finished. Matt Swift has simply put his, I'm going to butcher the pronouncement of this, but Arrakatus the Swordbearer. He looks like a special Space Marine character. Not sure what Legion he's from. And Paul Beach says Master Lazarus, the new Dark Angel model. It's his best so far. Yeah, very nice model. Over at Instagram, Henry Knowles 117, Johan the Scared Empire Citizen, one of the best out there. My underscore nervous for his third choice, Plague Marines. Second choice, Lady Orlando, and his top choice was his Knight of Shroud. Don't tell Duncan I use Peachy's Guide.
Ooh.
Can he be forgiven for that? And also on Instagram, we've got Disciple of Zyphan, third choice, Reaver Titan, second choice, Chaos Space Marine Sorcerer, and top choice, Abaddon the Despoiler. We now move over to Twitter, Matt. What have we got over there?
Yeah, so Pandora's Bits box has got some really cool bits. He's got a Cornate Knight, which I'm sure Duncan won't approve of, but yeah, it's really nicely painted. The Hierophant, the big Tyranid Bio-Titan Gribbly thing in a striking orange colour, which looks really cool. And a Rock Grinder. And I kind of want to paint some more Gene Steeler covers myself very soon. Pete Allison, Runebrusher, we had on the show a few weeks ago. He's got his Idoneth Soul Render, which is a really nice model. His Golden Demon winning, Knight Porphyrion.
At number two,
yeah. At number one, he kit-bashed a commander for the Warhammer Achievements tournament with his first attempt at non-metallic metal, and it looks really, really nice, the model. Bees. Jenny, she's got Vrox, Mortarion, and Magnus. Now, if you've not seen her Mortarion, it is absolutely gorgeous, the kind of moth-style effect she's done on the wings of it. Heretic Wargaming, he's got Khalgar, a Terminator Chaplain, and it looks like an Intercessor there. But the Chaplain is really, really nice. Very tempted to pick up one of those myself. Harry Holdsworth has got Thankful and Bone Ripper, the Spirit of Durthu, and Dreitcher. So I've actually played against this army at the last Purple Sparkly Unicorns Age of Sigmar event, and yet it's a really, really pretty army. Jem has got Junith, the Sisters of Battle character on the flying pulpit thing, and some Banshees and a Avatar of Cain. I think it's the Forge World one, which is a really, really nice model. Hobby from the Et It's got an awesome, it looks like a kind of Huntress with a falcon and a pistol. I'm not sure what game system it's from, but it's a really nice model. Tom Bombadil with an awesome kind of like resin water effect on the base. And it looks like an evocator with some awesome kind of glowing eyes, which is a really nice effect on it. And then Lutonium, we've got, looks like a Primaris Captain with a big thunder hammer, Belladonna from old school Necromunda, and then a nice Salamander Aggressor with his awesome kind of flamer gauntlets. So yeah, there's loads and loads and loads we've had here today. We can't go through them all because we'd be here all night, unfortunately. But I think Dave's going to put the picks from the best ones onto the actual post. And yeah, share all the love.
I will make an honourable mention for somebody.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, JV Paints is clearly very cultured and noble for the Battle Standard Bearer. Let's have a look at the heraldry. I think this must be Sir Callahad. No, that is a bad heraldic design.
Fantastic. Yeah, we are going to put a selection of those onto spruesandbrews.com on the podcast post when this podcast goes live, which will should be Friday evening, which is really cool. Matt, do you want to ask the all-important question before we wrap this up?
Well, this is right. So Duncan, you know this question by now, but as is tradition, we have to ask everyone who comes on the show what their favourite sprue is and what their favourite brew is.
Okay, so I think probably my favourite sprue would be the Adeptus Titanicus Warlord Titan. I think that kit is a spectacular achievement. It's absolutely beautiful. It's extremely detailed. It's wonderfully poseable. It's got the sense of weight about it that you would expect from a Titan. I think it's probably that, to be honest with you, when I just look at things. That said, I do really like the new Chaos Space Marine kit. I think that's a really nice evolution of the old one. It's really brings them up to date and shows off their style. So I think that's a very close second, I would say. As for brew, I have been a tea-drinking man for most of my life, but coffee's starting to fight its way in there. So I'm going to say tea. but it better watch its back.
Hold on, though. Sorry, we need to be a bit more precise here. When we say tea, are we which particular brand? Let's go to...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's Yorkshire Tea. They do it proper.
I didn't know there was any other brands of tea, to be fair.
Well, there are. They're mostly disappointed. No, not really. But, for any American listeners out there, or in fact anyone from anywhere, if you're in the UK and you want to have a proper cup of tea, Yorkshire Tea is what I would recommend.
Excellent.
So next week on the show, we want to know the top three games that you've always wanted to play but never got round to yet. So there's loads, and not just Games Workshop, but any games at all.
If you want to get your selections in early, you can do so via our various social media channels, of which the links are given at the end of the podcast. Or you can reply to the tweets and Facebook messages that we'll put out, or Matt remembers to put out, on either Monday or Tuesday. So just keep your eyes peeled on our social media. And that, gentlemen, brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Our thanks to Duncan for joining us for this week's show. It's been an absolute pleasure having you.
you're very welcome. Thanks very much for having me on the show. It's been lovely to talk to you folks and to talk to the audience as well, I guess. Once again, I'd like to say thank you for everyone who's been supporting me over the years. It means more to me than I could possibly ever tell you. So thank you very much.
And we'll make sure we put the link to the Painting Academy into the podcast notes so you can check it out and subscribe. Guys, we'll be back again next week. Meet you all later. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter at spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.